Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Before we begin today's show, we want to give you an update on the government shutdown. The USDA says SNAP recipients will receive up to 65% of their benefits for November. Newsweek reports that the USDA's memo to states offered no timeline or distribution details, leaving 42 million recipients uncertain about when and how aid will arrive. Advocates warn that the lack of clarity is compounding stress for families already struggling to afford groceries. If you live in San Francisco, you should be receiving a letter with instructions on how to receive your full benefits for the month of November. Contra Costa County supervisors voted to provide $21 million in benefits for CalFresh recipients. Officials in Marin, Alameda, Sonoma, and Napa counties have also approved emergency funds for benefits and for food banks. But officials say that their efforts are just band-aids. They are still calling on the Trump administration to release all SNAP benefits. And millions of people voted during this government shutdown. Democrats were victorious across the board. Californians overwhelmingly passed Prop 50. We discussed Prop 50 on yesterday's show. Zoran Mamdani won New York City's mayoral race with over 2 million people casting ballots. It's the highest turnout in a local New York City race since at least the 1969 mayoral race, according to the New York Daily News. Mamdani got 50.4% of the vote. They're still being counted. Andrew Cuomo got 41.6%, and Republican candidate Curtis Sliwa got 7.1%. Zoran Mamdani will be the first Democratic socialist, first Muslim, and first South Asian to run the city of New York. He's only 34 years old, and he ran on a platform to make New York City affordable by freezing the rent, building affordable housing, raising the minimum wage to $30 by the year 2030, regulating delivery apps and protecting delivery workers, creating a network of city-owned grocery stores, and providing fast and fair free buses and no-cost childcare. He says he will pay for his agenda by taxing corporations and the top 1%. Here is part of Zoran Mamdani's victory speech.
The sun may have set over our city this evening. But as Eugene Debs once said, I can see the dawn of a better day for humanity. For as long as we can remember, the working people of New York have been told by the wealthy and the well-connected that power does not belong in their hands. Fingers bruised from lifting boxes on the warehouse floor, palms calloused from delivery bike handlebars, knuckles scarred with kitchen burns. These are not hands that have been allowed to hold power. And yet, over the last 12 months, you have dared to reach for something greater. Tonight, against all odds, we have grasped it. The future is in our hands. My friends, we have toppled a political dynasty.
On election night, More Perfect Union spoke with Zoran Mamdani supporters.
The city strives on working people. Immigrants who come to work early in the morning, 4:30, 5:30 in the morning, nobody's awake yet. We go and we pick up our cabs on the street, we go and we start working, we run around. And that's who he represents. He represents the people who keep going, the little people who keep running around and make the city what it is.
Zoran has taken the train, he's talked to people on the street, he's come out to picket lines, and that's somebody who we want to know can be our leader.
I believe that this is a catalyst to something big that can happen across the country. I believe that people are tired of both being paid lip service to by the Democrats and the Republicans. I think people are moved by these ideas.
It gives everybody a lot of optimism for what New York can really offer for working class people.
He's our mayor. We needed this. We've never had anybody that actually believed in the people, that listened to the people. This guy gets it.
That was More Perfect Union talking to Zoran Mamdani supporters across the country. Joining us to talk about Election Day and what is next for the Democratic Party are two guests. John Nichols is executive editor of The Nation. He previously served as the magazine's national affairs correspondent and Washington correspondent. John Nichols has written, co-written, or edited over a dozen books. His latest, co-written with Senator Bernie Sanders, is called It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. Hi, John. Thanks so much for joining us again.
It's just great to be with you and with our fellow guests.
It's great to have you again, John. We're also joined by Luis Feliz Leon, associate editor and organizer at Labor Notes. In a recent piece for In These Times, Luis writes about Zoran Mamdani returning to his base among New York City's multiracial working class. Hi, Luis. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. John, I've been thinking a lot about where we are in this country with Election Day, and I'm wondering if you can kind of paint the scene for us, because when Trump was running, there were so many stories about the high cost of gas, the high cost of groceries, and he promised to bring prices down. This was nonstop, and yet prices are still so incredibly high. And then you add the government shutdown to that. People cannot make ends meet, including people on SNAP, but also government workers who have been fired or government workers who are furloughed. I just talked to a TSA agent and she said, we're sending letters to creditors because we can't pay our bills. And then over the last, 6 months, we've been seeing these horrific ICE videos of everyday immigrants and people being thrown on the ground, thrown in cars. Their loved ones have no idea where they are. So can you set this up for us, John? This is not any, quote, normal election.
No, this is not a normal election. But it is an election that fits into a certain position in our election calendar. And that's the way to understand it. Let's step back for a moment and recognize we have been in political chaos since the early 1980s. We have not, since 1980, had a president who served a full four-year term with Congress controlled by his party. That hasn't happened. Every president that's come since 1980 has been elected, often with a Congress, and then lost control of the Congress 2 years in. And so it has been a chaotic, sort of whipsaw now better part of 46 years, 45 years of our politics. And in many ways, Donald Trump was a culmination of that because he is the chaos embodied. He got elected in 2016 because he offered himself as an alternative to a political establishment in both parties that was neglectful of economics. He got knocked out. He lost his majority 2 years later, knocked out of the presidency 4 years later because he didn't do a good job on it. Democrats came in. They actually did a better job, but they didn't know how to talk about it. They were terrible communicators, as they always are. And so in 2024, Trump comes back. All sorts of promises to, maybe try to resolve this chaos, which, again, is decades old. Instead, he amplifies it. He makes it worse than it has ever been, worse than we could have imagined. It has both the economic turbulence and turmoil, but also the cruelty, the ugliness that you've described. And so voters, they're asked to come to the polls in off-year elections. And there is only one way that this off-year election could have mattered, right, in a fundamental way. And that is if in every corner of the United States, New York, New Jersey, Virginia, California, Georgia, where you had two state public service commission races flip from Republican to Democrat, almost unheard of. Mississippi, where control of the Republican supermajority in the state Senate was removed. So for the first time in a very long time, Democrats actually have some ability to check and balance power there. State after state after state, everywhere across America where it mattered, Pennsylvania, where you had judicial races, et cetera, the reaction was, we want to stop Trump. We want to stop what he is doing. We want a different direction. And so this election, like a few other off-year elections in the past, but not that many, this election sent an absolutely clear signal. It was, this is potent politics. This is something real and consequential. But, and this is the last codicil I'll add to this, the way to break the whipsaw pattern, right? It, you know, Democrat to Republican to Democrat to Republican, et cetera, and the break things breaking down 2 years in, the way to break the whipsaw cycle is not merely to oppose the absolute chaos of Trump, but to offer something different, something that is dramatically better and might actually be a new course for America. And that's what we got out of New York City, because Zohra Mamdani, who studied, who's literally aware of this whipsaw cycle and actually studied what brought Trump back to power, has developed an agenda that is both practical and aspirational. And he speaks about it in ways that are, you know, incredibly powerful. This is democratic socialism. It might go by other names, you know, in the hands of other Democrats. But the bottom line is that we got a twofer out of this election. You got the pushback against Trump, a dramatic, important signal from the electorate, a meaningful signal. And you got, as Zohra Mamdani spoke about in his victory speech, you know, sort of a dawn, a possibility of a politics that might break the cycle and convince working class people that there actually is a way to empower political figures who will make a fundamental change for the better in their lives. So it's, you know, it's about as big an election day in an off-year circumstance that I've seen in my time covering politics.
And to add to your list, John, a few other things that are not getting as much attention, and I'm reading right now from Popular Information, Pennsylvania mm-hmm. County ousted a sheriff who collaborated with ICE. Progressives yep. won control of a Texas school board that censored books. Georgia elected its first mm-hmm. Democrat to a non-federal statewide office since 2006. You talked about Mississippi Democrats breaking the Republican supermajority in the state Senate. Colorado voters increased taxes on the wealthy to pay for school meals. And then Maine voters rejected a voter ID ballot initiative from Republicans. So a lot happened on Tuesday that just didn't mm-hmm. get much attention because of the really big races.
And if I could just say it very quickly, because I know Louise will bring much more brilliant insights to this. But the one last part of it is our media is incapable of covering politics. You know, I mean, that's, you and I've talked about this a lot. And the fact is, it's just not up to the task. And it doesn't have the courage to get away from both siderism and actually say, you know, look, this was a referendum on Donald Trump. It was sufficiently national. It was multi-region, you know, in all sorts of places, from the south to the northeast to the west to the interior parts of the country. And there was just this incredibly powerful signal that people are sick of it. They don't want it. And that's the way we should analyze it. And we should talk about it not for one day after, not on the Wednesday after an election, but as you're doing on the Thursday after. And we should keep talking about this, because it is absolutely essential to the resistance to what Trump is doing.
And Luis, before we talk about the reporting you've done on Zohra Mamdani, just to bring some context to his race and what's happening in New York, I've been hearing so many people on the cable shows and the interviews that he's done in the national media ask him, you know, how are you going to pay for this? If you're going to tax the rich, they're going to leave New York City. And I thought to myself, what is the poverty rate in New York? What is actually happening in New York City? We all know it's expensive. We all know that housing is so expensive, but I really wanted to dig down and I haven't really heard this. So Robin Hood is an organization that works to alleviate poverty in New York City. And they collaborated with Columbia University's Center on Poverty and Social Policy. They found that New York City's poverty rate is 25%. This is up from last year. So one in four New Yorkers are living in poverty. 1.6 million adults, 420,000 children. So I always ask this question, Luis, where's the context? Because he ran on a platform to make the city affordable for all. We're hearing about these billionaires who don't like him. People are saying that, you know, you're living, this is a dream world. You're not going to have free childcare. But the context here is that one in four New Yorkers are living in poverty. That's a huge number.
That's right. So I'll start by sharing an anecdote. So I'm both a reporter, but I'm also an organizer. So as I've made clear in my articles, I volunteered for the Soron campaign. And on election day, I was standing at a poll site in my neighborhood in Kew Gardens. And a woman walked up to me and she told me, you know, I'm still undecided about this election. And she had a bag of groceries with her. And she took out the bag and showed me a package of chicken breasts, and it cost her $19. And she told me, you know, I'm a single mom. I don't live in a rent stabilized apartment, but a whole paycheck goes for me to cover rent, and I feel like I just don't have enough. What is Zoran Mamdani gonna do to address that issue that I have? Because you know, free buses sounds great, but I ride the train. So that contextualizes what's on the minds of New York, of New Yorkers. So like the clip at the outset said, you know, New York's working class not only toppled a political dynasty, but they also delivered Zoran Mamdani a mandate to make people's lives better by using the levers of government to address the affordability crisis decimating our lives. You know, John talked about neoliberalism in the 80s. So we've been hearing these stories that government doesn't work to better people's lives for far too long. Those old stories will not hold sway. We cannot dismiss the role of government in making working people's lives better. That's why Mamdani is calling for taxing the rich to pay for free childcare and free buses by adding a 2% tax for anyone making more than $1 million a year, which will raise $4 billion a year, raising the top state corporate tax rate to 11.5%, which is the same rate as New Jersey. That will raise $5 billion a year. The state's corporate tax rate is currently about 6%. So for far too long, government's role in our lives has been undeniable. But rather than government making people's lives more affordable and dignified, it has created a widening chasm of wealth inequality, concentrating wealth in the hands of the few, while the majority of working people plead for deliverance from misery and despair. Well, deliverance has come. We were the people we've been praying for to build a better world.
And what's incredible about Mamdani is that a year ago, he was polling at just 1%. Most people had never heard of him. And I think this is so important, Luis, because you wrote a great piece about Mamdani talking to cab drivers a couple nights before the election. You know, these are cab drivers that work in some cases all night. They go to work very early in the morning. And it's important to note that because we did a lot of coverage about what happened to New York City taxi drivers, they were dying by suicide because of Uber and Lyft. They just could not pay for their medallions. I mean, we're seeing this in many big cities across the country, but especially in New York. And the Real News Network has a great video, a piece about this. And in 2021, when New York City taxi drivers were dying by suicide and others were going on hunger strike, begging City Hall for relief from the debt trap that had set them up for failure and financial ruin, a young New York assembly person named Zoran Mamdani stood with them. Now taxi drivers are standing with him. So can you talk about this? There was also a video of someone wanting to interview Mamdani when he was on hunger strike with taxi drivers. And he said, don't interview me. Talk to the taxi drivers.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. One of the things that I heard when I was at the victory party was a tenant calling him the people's mayor. So I think that he's led as a movement assemblyman. And now he will be a movement mayor, putting the needs of working class people front and center. There's something that I think it's also important to capture. So Zohran Mamdani will be the first Muslim mayor. So based on the corporate playbook of the Democrats, it's important to distinguish what makes Zohran unique, because there's been a lot of emphasis on the diversity of the coalition that he was able to build. So for far too long, we have had a cynical politics of neoliberalism, where what matters is what bosses want, which is easily exploitable workers without unions, underfunded schools and hospitals to fill corporate coffers with billions in tax cuts and tax breaks. Among the savviest of these corporate class operatives, what amounts to naked ploys to steal from the working class to enrich billionaires comes up dressed in the garb of multicultural biography. Zohran Mamdani didn't simply invoke a tableau of racial, ethnic, and religious diversity. He was part of a working class movement that pushed a platform that made a compelling case for addressing the needs of working class people. Without the substance of those class politics, call it democratic socialism, you don't have the movement that made Zohran Mamdani's victory possible. It's not simply the man and his undeniable political talents. It's the politics of standing on principles and siding with workers against the billionaires who make their lives miserable. So that's the context in which Mamdani goes on participates in a 15-day hunger strike with taxi workers. And those taxi workers become part of the army that mobilizes to get him into power. So in my piece, Bhairavi Desai talks about how when they were on hunger strike, when the physicians came and they were trying to provide treatment, Zohran said, have the workers, you know, first get treated. So every step he's taking towards power has been moving along the side of working class people. And that is how he is positioning himself. That's how he's positioning himself to lead. So he isn't closing shop, for example, in contrast to what Barack Obama did. His supporters just launched an organization called Our Time for an Affordable NYC to make sure politicians back his affordability agenda. And that organizing is only going to broaden and deepen in the coming months. So he is a movement candidate. And I think that the lesson here isn't so much about the corporate diversity that the Democrats have been, you know, emphasizing for years. Hillary Clinton talking about, it's my turn. You know, I grew up not far from East Elmhurst, where I canvassed for the primary. And I saw whole families from South Asia going in to vote, people from Pakistan, people from Bangladesh. And for New Yorkers, there's a sense in which this campaign very much fits a pattern of Italians, Jews, Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, kind of building a political machine to come into power, except that the political machine that we are building is one driven by working class politics with a working class agenda. So he's knitted a multiracial, multi-ethnic coalition, but is rooted in working class principles and in a working class agenda that isn't afraid to take the fight to the billionaires. That's why a lot of the mainstream press was focused on the shift in tone the New York Times was talking about, because in his acceptance speech, he said, you know, if anyone is coming for an immigrant, anyone comes for an immigrant New Yorker, they're gonna have to go through all of us, right? So that is the spirit of a fighting working class movement. And that is what Mamdani brought to the campaign. And I hope that that is what he continues to bring to city governance.
Before we let you go, Luis, there's an article in The Guardian with a great headline by Ashifa Kassam. Europeans recognize Zohran Mamdani's supposedly radical policies as normal. Critics of New York City's mayor-elect have said his pledges of free bus service and universal childcare are unrealistic, but in Europe, it's a given. Given that, what are your thoughts about why top Democratic officials didn't want to talk about Zohran Mamdani, were either late to endorse him or didn't endorse him at all? There's a piece in the New York Times today called As Mamdani Surges Ahead, Schumer Risks Finding Himself Left Behind. Senator Chuck Schumer wouldn't even say who he voted for. Why do you think this is the case with the Democratic Party?
Well, a rebellion has been brewing for far too long. And, you know, it exploded in an electoral earthquake in New York. And maybe the shockwaves, you know, have chilled the spines of the wealthy and their corporate, you know, allies in the Democratic Party. But they have clearly steeled the resolve of all the working people in New York and across the country that are demanding a better future. Like John said, you know, it's not just a referendum in opposition to Donald Trump. People want an alternative. And the Democrats have demonstrated in practice that they are not that alternative. So here the choice is this husk of an institution going to be infused with new blood and fresh ideas, or is it going to dig in deeper? And I think that's kind of like what has them in this state of paralysis, where they don't, they're not openly hostile to him anymore. But they are trying to see how much I would imagine he is able to accommodate, if he's going to moderate. You know, there's an old saying in politics that the best way to moderate someone is to corrupt them with power, because you are so busy on just doing the basics that of city governance, of making sure that, you know, the garbage gets picked up, that the snow is plowed and so forth, that these larger ideas take the back seat. But that's why Zoran is a candidate that is backed by a movement, because he's not going to be able to do it alone. So I think what you are hearing from these headlines is a real fear that there is a real shift happening. And I have jokingly said that this election put socialism, democratic socialism, or barbarism on the agenda. And the barbarism that we are facing, we are seeing it every day, where the billionaires have taken millions from working class people, and the Democrats have been, and the Republicans have been a part of that, and distributed upwards to the very rich. All the while, as wealth has been redistributed upwards, you know, we have seen Donald Trump and his allies punching down, landing blows on hardworking immigrants seeking a better life, demonizing them as the enemy, stripping them of rights, racially profiling them for kidnapping. So here's, you know, Zoran spoke to that. He spoke, I will not only be a candidate that stands with immigrants, I am also myself an immigrant, and I will be governing, you know, as one, as a socialist, as a Muslim. So I think that is very frightening, because we are past the platitudes that invoke diversity. We are talking class politics. Zoran Mamdani is Bernie Sanders' rightful heir.
Luis Feliz Leon is associate editor and organizer at Labor Notes. You can find his In These Times pieces, Zoran Mamdani on the Night Shift for Mayor. He's got another really important piece, Immigrant Subway Cleaners in New York Win Millions. The victory surrounds back wages and the dangerous work cleaners undertook during COVID. Thanks so much for your work, Luis, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. He also volunteered for Mamdani's campaign. Coming up after a break, we'll ask John Nichols the same question about the Democratic Party and why they were late to endorse Zoran Mamdani or did not endorse him at all. You can join us at 866-798-8255. What do you make of election night? Democrats were victorious across the board. What does this mean for the future of the Democratic Party? 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on our media roundtable tomorrow, we will discuss media coverage of Mamdani's victory in New York City. We'll also talk about Palestinian-American teenager Mohammed Ibrahim, who's been held in an Israeli military prison for the last 8 months. Monday, Thea Riofrancos will join us to talk about her new book, Extraction, The Frontiers of Green Capitalism. Tuesday is Veterans Day, and we're going to be speaking with a few veterans. They're with a group called Veterans Against Fascism, and they are sleeping outside of the White House to fight the Trump administration, specifically sending the National Guard, and ICE agents to cities across the country. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. If you have any comments about Election Day, comments about the future of the Democratic Party, John Nichols, executive editor of The Nation, has written a number of books about the Democratic Party. If you have any questions for him, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. John, how do you answer that question about why Democrats still really did not know what to do with Zohran Mamdani? They either, I'm talking about the most powerful Democrats, they either endorsed him really late, or in the case of Senator Chuck Schumer, he wouldn't say who he voted for mayor. John, are you still with us? Is John still there?
I'm muted.
You were muted. Okay, no problem.
I muted while listening to the very wise comments of my colleague, and not wanting to interrupt. So I'm back with you now to say that the Democratic Party has always had a problem with its left, and this is an important thing to understand. There are Democrats at the grassroots who are incredibly progressive. And this is all over the country. I travel the country a lot. And I can tell you, I've been at events in Texas and North Dakota and, you know, New England, but also, Wisconsin, small towns, et cetera. The base of the Democratic Party is very, very comfortable with a progressive agenda, with a democratic socialist agenda. It's always wanted to push harder, do more. And they've always been right, right? This is what appeals to voters. However, the Democratic Party has, at the national level, been seen as a concession that very wealthy campaign consultants and even wealthier campaign donors can take over and make their own. So their great mission, really, since the death of Franklin Roosevelt, has been to make sure the Democratic Party doesn't become too progressive, doesn't become too bold, doesn't tax the rich too much, doesn't support labor unions too aggressively, doesn't stand too strongly for economic and social and racial justice, doesn't really become a party of liberation, but rather a party of saying, well, we're not that great, but the Republicans are worse. That's what they want. And it works very well for them. As groups like the Sunshine Foundation, others have suggested, there's never been a better time and never a better political system than ours for the very, very rich, right? For the very wealthy, because we have lived for decades in an era where the rich get richer, right? And the working class gets more hard pressed. Circumstances become worse. That's the way to understand the leadership of the Democratic Party. And we romanticize a lot of these folks. We try to tell ourselves, well, they're not as bad as, you know, as all that. But they got a real test when Zohran Mamdani came along. And here you had a guy who did everything that Democrats said they needed after their 2024 defeat. What did they say they needed? They had to figure out how to renew the enthusiasm of young voters. They had to, you know, offset the inroads that Trump had made among people of color, particularly Latinx voters. They had to get a better economic message. I mean, there was a long list of everything they needed to do, right? So within months of their terrible defeat in 2024, whoa, here comes this young 34-year-old guy, 33-year-old at the time, in New York City, who addresses the economic issues in ways that is incredibly effective, figures out how to reach out to communities that had become disaffected, and mobilize the tens of thousands of young people as volunteers. It's a dream come true. It's the perfect answer. It's the antidote. And what do the Democrats at leadership level say? Oh my gosh, we can't go near this. Some Democratic members of Congress actually condemned him directly. Others said, oh, we have to meet with him. We have to hear from him, blah, blah, blah. He's got to explain to us why we should back the Democratic nominee for the largest city in the United States. Imagine that. Imagine anywhere in the world where a political party leadership would say, well, yes, it's the biggest city in the country. It's a city that captures the imagination of the whole country. It's a race that is getting all sorts of attention. It's a young candidate who is incredibly dynamic, but we don't know if we can support him. Hmm. Well, the reason for that is that they don't want to be a progressive Democratic Party. That horrifies them. It terrifies them. And so Mamdani had to go on his own for a substantial portion of the early period of his candidacy. But he kept going from strength to strength. And here's the important thing to understand about Zoran Mamdani. He doesn't come from a place of bitterness. He doesn't come from a place of, you know, feeling that he's being let down or you know, abandoned by the Democratic leadership. He knows the Democratic leadership's problems. He recognizes it very, very well. So he went out and did the sort of grassroots, multiracial, multiethnic, multilingual campaigning, maintaining bold stances on fundamental issues. And he started to attract more and more grassroots support in New York. He attracted so much that Governor Kathy Hochul decided, wow, I've got to get on the side of Mamdani because he's doing really well. So she endorsed him. Did Hochul's endorsement help Mamdani in any way? Probably not. It's very likely that everybody who came to Mamdani was either already there or was coming there, whether Hochul endorsed or not. But she got on board because she knew she needed to be there. Same thing happened with Hakeem Jeffries. He represents a district that has a lot of Mamdani support. He finally came around to grudgingly at the last stages endorse. Did it matter? No, it didn't matter for Mamdani. He didn't need that endorsement. He was going to win. But there was a case of leadership kind of jumping into the parade that had already left. Schumer never came there. He couldn't even endorse his own party's nominee in his own hometown. And well, part of why this happened is that these Democratic leaders have gotten so used to a kind of politics that is so broken and so dysfunctional that they think anything that sort of pushes it forward and actually might make their party more popular is dangerous. Slowly, I think Mamdani has succeeded in causing some of them to wake up, to look a little more broadly. He's made real inroads with progressives like Bernie Sanders. Of course, Bernie Sanders, who backed him, AOC, who backed him, but also other members like Senator Van Hollen from Maryland and others who've started to say, wow, you know, this guy's onto something. So he is from the grassroots and from this new position beginning to change the party. It's going to be a real battle. There is always a fight for the soul of the Democratic Party. And one final thing I'll tell you is that by and large, the major media of this country is on the side of the campaign consultants and the campaign donors, not on the side of the base of the party, not on the side of some sort of progressive vision. And so you get a media coverage that even now in the post-election period where Mamdani has won an overwhelming victory, blown turnout records, gotten higher votes for himself, all this incredible stuff, they're still saying, well, I'm not sure if he can succeed or isn't he dangerous for the Democratic Party because he's just too interesting and too likable and too dynamic. And you know, Democrats are supposed to be, you know, boring and, you know, hard to like and not very innovative. That's their job, is to be just sort of a gray alternative to a crazy Republican Party. And so you hear that from the media, you will keep hearing it, but the bottom line is Zoran Mamdani, who is not perfect, he has many flaws, and I think he'd be the first to admit it, but he's unlocked ideas about how to make a different politics. I've interviewed him at great length, and I can tell you, this is someone who thinks deeply about everything we're talking about right now, who has a vision for how to build a politics that works. He will be very generous to the Democratic leaders who were not generous to him, because if he needs them, he will work with them. He will even work with Republicans if it is going to deliver for working class voters. And if that succeeds, if he gets those buses coming free, fast and free, if he starts to get that rent stabilized, if he makes the fundamental changes that make lives better, and if he stands up for immigrants and does not allow Donald Trump to bring, you know, whatever crisis he will seek to bring to the city. If he does this, Mamdani will emerge as something more than just the mayor of New York. He will emerge as the face of an alternative to a broken politics that will have appeal not just to Democrats and independents, but I dare say even to some people who have in frustration voted Republican because they didn't think government could get its act together. If Mamdani succeeds, we could be looking at a transformational politics.
And real quick, John, because we have a few callers on the line and a lot of emails. Right after Trump went back to the White House, Mamdani took to the streets of, I think it was either Queens or the Bronx. Sorry, I don't remember. But he had a sign that said, "Let's talk about the election." And he interviewed people of color who voted for Trump because they were just so just they were sick of it all. They said, you know, everything's more expensive. Politicians are not talking to us. So why not vote for the guy who wants to break everything? And that got a lot of attention. And so if you look now at who voted for him, a lot of those Trump voters voted for him. The Guardian reports that in predominantly black precincts, voters overwhelmingly favored Mamdani. He increased his advantage in neighborhoods with large Latino populations. He won in low-income and middle-income districts. And then where people were 45 years old or younger, he held the biggest lead. But when you look at Brooklyn, Manhattan, Queens, and the Bronx, he won. The only place he didn't win was Staten Island. So what does that tell you, John, at a time when 90 million people did not vote in the presidential election?
Everything. It tells us everything. Look, I mean, I write about politics. It's what I do. And I say, sometimes I'll occasionally say something rather blunt about the Democratic Party or about particular political figures. I don't do that casually. It's not, and it's not even always fun, you know, because people get mad at you or whatever. But the bottom line is this. This is not a hard political system to understand. The Democratic Party has not given people what they need. And so we actually have discussions about why do working class people, quote unquote, vote against their own self-interest? Well, if you don't offer them enough, then yeah, some people will vote against their own self-interest economically. Some other people will just not vote. What you're looking at here with Mamdani is just a beginning. It's not the end of anything. It's the opening of a discussion about what the Democratic Party should be. Truthfully, Bernie Sanders began that discussion in 2015 and 2016. I will hold to this point. I do not say it casually. If Bernie Sanders had been nominated for president in 2016, he would have beaten Donald Trump. And that is something that, you know, a lot of Democrats say, oh, no, you don't know that, blah, 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 blah. I have spent enough time talking to disaffected voters to be absolutely certain that Bernie Sanders would have beaten Donald Trump in 2016, and we'd be a fundamentally different country. We've lost 8 years or more. It's a tragedy, and what Trump has done has been horrific. But if Democrats actually were to start to think about wanting to win elections with massive majorities, or at least with huge turnout that roots back to the Roosevelt era, the Franklin Roosevelt era, where the Democratic Party really was an incredibly broad coalition and won again and again and again and again. Sanders, AOC, and Mamdani hold out that promise. Will Democrats embrace it? Well, that's why I cover politics. We'll try and figure it out over the next couple of years.
There's a great video, and I want to have on this More Perfect Union reporter who went with Bernie Sanders to West Virginia in September and spoke with Trump voters. He sat down in a restaurant with them, talked about his views. He gave us a talk. And by the end of the talk, everybody said they would have voted for Bernie if they had the chance. They said, "We thought you were this crazy commie based on what we hear in the news, but I love your views. I just didn't know." And so I think he's done this many times, which is fascinating to watch. And not that surprising, because he's talking to people who are struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take a call,
yeah,
John.
And it's just, look.
People have been waiting. We have so many emails, and then we'll get your response. Let's go to Dell in Oakland. Hi, Dell. Sorry about that. Thanks for holding.
No worries. Let's go. I'm so excited. It's finally bringing me hope. The Democratic Party really needs to get it together and stop letting lobbyists run their department. I think the multimillionaires are ruining it, and I think Israel lobbyists are ruining the Democratic Party. He is giving me hope, because since Bernie Sanders, I've been so disappointed in the Democratic Party. And I think your speaker is right, that Bernie would have beat Trump without a problem. And I'm just so excited and so proud. And I really hope that the Democratic Party stops. You know, they evolve. They need to evolve. The younger generation cannot afford to live. And they're the ones that need to be excited. And they're the ones that are going to vote. They're the ones that are going to save the Democratic Party. So let's go. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you for the comment, Del. John, I want to read a few emails, and we'd love to get your response. Winifred writes, I wish Democrats could acknowledge that by helping the bottom and the middle of the economy, we get a thriving economy, especially small business owners. And in a thriving economy, everybody does well, and the wealthy do very well. Graham writes, some other analysts have pointed out that Democratic victories across the country may have been possible by the strength of Mamdani's campaign and by his national name recognition, made possible in part via social media. Let's hope Democrats' so-called leadership are paying attention. Brenda writes, I listened to a comedian, Josh Johnson, and he said Zoran Mamdani's answer to taxing billionaires is he's matching what they already do in New Jersey. Another listener writes, voters want more than technical fixes. They want a life that works. Too often, establishment Democrats act like people are ignorant, treating inequality as an information gap. If you're in debt, take a budgeting class. If you have diabetes, take a nutrition class. But people already know these things. Low wages make budgeting very difficult. And late buses that get you home late leave you too tired to cook. Progressives like Zoran Mamdani understand that faster buses and higher wages are not side issues. They're what makes dignity possible. Art writes, is there one affirmative agenda that can unify progressive and moderate Democrats that will unify the majority of the country enough to win the 2026 midterms? Or must Democrats accept that there's a different message for urban progressives versus suburban and rural moderates, but each side of the party can accept the other and pull together for victory? Great comments and great question, Art. What are your thoughts, John?
Lots of them. And I love your audience. Obviously, respect the enthusiasm. May not agree on every aspect, and that's why we're Americans, I guess, at our best. But basically, what people are saying here is that they've seen.
Oh, John, your line's cutting out.
Happen in one city. And how do I sound now?
You sound
Can
better.
You hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks.
I apologize. Yeah, I was cutting out a little on some of the before. So I, great apologies. Hope this will work.
No problem.
What I'm telling you is, or what I'm suggesting is that we have a long history in this country of something happening in one city or one state that inspires the rest of the country. This is not uncommon. You are broadcasting, I think, from San Francisco or near San Francisco. Harvey Milk in the 1970s sent a message out from San Francisco that was heard nationwide and was transformational for millions of people. Harold Washington in the early 1980s, elected mayor of Chicago, first black mayor of that city, sent a message out that it really laid the basis for the Rainbow Coalition. Bernie Sanders, elected in Burlington, Vermont, in the early 80s, reminded us that there was something called democratic socialism, and that was a reality that could exist in the United States. Again and again and again, we've had a message come from one place that had resonance beyond that place. We have leaders of the Democratic Party that will always resist that. But the fact of the matter is that what Zoran Mamdani has now is a unique platform, the biggest city in the country, the most populous city, but also the one that captures people's imagination. Can he speak to the whole country? The answer is absolutely yes. And I know I feel so sorry for the pundits on TV that don't get away from those tables in New York or Washington where they sit. But if you come out to America, you're going to find an excitement about Zoran Mamdani that extends beyond just about anything else in politics. I was in New Glarus, Wisconsin, after Mamdani won the primary. I was speaking to about 150 people who were farmers and small business owners. I think they were more on the progressive end of the political spectrum, but they were out there in a rural town in Wisconsin. Now, there are those who would say, well, these are the kind of people, even if they're Democrats, that certainly don't want anything, you know, like Zoran Mamdani. Well, I mentioned that I was going to New York and would be interviewing Mamdani a couple days later. The crowd erupted into spontaneous applause. And when I finished the event in New Glarus, Wisconsin, this small town, everybody came up to me to want to talk about Mamdani. And they had all sorts of different perspectives. But the one thing that excited them was there was this young, dynamic leader who was talking about economic and social and racial justice and about Gaza without apology. And they were like, boy, that's what we need. That's what we're looking for. And so I don't think this is a left-right thing. I don't think it's a regional thing. I think a blunt politics that says it favors economic justice, racial justice, social justice, and that looks at the world from a humanitarian, human rights perspective rather than, you know, some sort of awful, broken political calculus. I think people want that. I think they're desperate for it. I think it is an alternative to Trumpism that has tremendous potential for the Democratic Party. But the Democratic Party's got to wrap its head around this. Mm. Will they? They have not in the past.
You know, so, to your point, John, just quickly, Mara Liasson on NPR this morning said, I don't think you're going to see Mamdani's platform and proposals replicated in anywhere else in the country, except for maybe another blue city. And I was just thinking about New Mexico just launched free childcare. It just went into effect this month. And this is going to be paid for by a tax on oil and gas companies. Mm-hmm. So everyone in New Mexico is going to have free childcare for the first time. It's the first state in the country to do this.
Yep. And what is Mamdani proposing in New York? Something similar. Right. Let me just offer you this example.
And we have 30 seconds.
Sure. Not everybody likes Graham Plattner who's running for the Senate up in Maine, but take a look at Graham Plattner. Tell me on policy how he's different than Mamdani. And then note the fact that in polls right now, he's leading. He's showing great strength in the state of Maine, which is urban and rural and very, very competitive politically. So I think these ideas can translate all over the country.
And Maine voters just rejected a Republican-supported voter ID ballot initiative. John Nichols is executive editor of The Nation. He's the author of many books. His latest, co-written with Senator Bernie Sanders, is the New York Times bestseller, It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. Thanks so much for joining us again, John.
Great to be with you, Rose.
Thank you. And thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show today. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.